great chemical demonstration where you have two beakers of what looks like clear liquid. You mix the two beakers together and big billowing cloud of thick yellow precipitate paint gets made from clear. It goes suddenly yellow. This is spectacular. People look at it. And if you take this and add a little bit of another clear liquid, which I'll explain later, just a few drops of that, and you heat it up to almost boiling for a while, the yellow will get a bit weaker and then go clear again. It's gone, the yellow's gone. And then, as if by magic, over the next half hour or hour, as it cools down very slowly, these beautiful long shards of gold will appear in a liquid. Gold will appear to grow as these tiny little sort of they're sort of flat little shards, and they come down, they rain down. You can almost, and if you shake it, you can actually hear it tinkle gold, and you can see this gold appear. And this is alchemy at its best. And this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I'm going through cardiac rehab. It's hard to say it. I'm trying to actually speak more coherently and on topics for a long time without too much preparation. So I have to apologize if some of my earlier podcasts today are a little bit rusty. This is a podcast which I really want to get quite deep into to develop your understanding of what was in that clear liquid, and rather than people just tell you it's this iron, it's an iron with a ball of water around it. That's what I want to get to you. So let's do the chemical reactions. There's in one beaker, one clear liquid is potassium chloride, KCl, and if you've ever watched soap operas, is something that you inject and it destroys the balance and stops your heart beating. I think they actually inject it into your heart during open heart surgery to stop your heart beating. It's much better than being punched or anything else like that. And then they flush it out to get your heart beating again, or drain it out and then restart your heart. And the other is something called lead nitrate. One of the things is that leads are very small. Lead as a salt is a very small iron. That's Pb plus or Pb2 plus, I'm not quite sure. And nitrate is a polyatomic anion, that is. It's got nitrogen and three oxygens together, and although there's no reason for it, it can actually squirrel away two electrons in it in orbitals which go all the way through it. So the electrons are not sitting around the outside, the electrons go through all the way through it. And you add these two together, and the lead, which... as if you imagine little ions, so these are floating in water, so each little lead atom is floating equidistant in the water. We'll explain a bit later what's going on. And as soon as you mix the two together, the lead starts to sense the chlorine, and rather than having a sheath, this large sheath of water around, they start to burrow and work towards each other and start to shed the water. So if you can imagine a lead iron, a chlorine iron, and they start to burrow towards each other until they stick together and start to form a crystal. So what I want to do is just get deeper in, and form an ionic bond and form a crystal. And this goes down and it forms a crystal in cold water. Heat the water up again a little bit more. I think you have to add hydrochloric acid. That's just from memory. If I had notes, I'd look more of it. And if you're actually doing this experiment, you'll read on the net exactly how to do it. Add a bit of hydrochloric acid just to increase the acidity for some reason. And you heat it up. The water starts to dissolve the lead chloride, and this lead chloride becomes clear again, and as it cools down, the lead and the chlorine go together more slowly and have a bit of difficulty getting towards each other, trying to shed away. So imagine you've got, I hate to say it, you can use your own imagination on this, but imagine water as many layers of clothing, and at a certain point you start to shed your layers of clothing and come up with a charge of the opposite sign. You go and start to stick together a big clump of the opposite sign. So when it cools down more slowly, this is a more slow process, and those little yellow dots grow into a little crystal, and the crystal becomes the center. That crystal interacts with the water around it and becomes more like a landing zone for the individual chlorines and leads atoms to come out of solution. That's a process. Now, one of the things I want to say, if you put any, like a, you've got a Olympic swimming pool, and you put a single drop of salt in it, that's sodium chloride in it, that's a drop of salt will expand up to the size of the swimming pool, and I know it does because I can stick a cup in at any point and pick out a certain quantity of that salt. That salt crystal has expanded in physical size and has maintained more or less its iron orientation. So it goes for salt, sodium, chloride in one level, and then it reverses chloride, sodium, and that matrix has maintained its same orientation, but it's dragged water into it. And so this solution process is the sodium and the chlorine are different charged ions, and so if you say have magnets or north-south magnets, or you have positive and negative charges, the best thing to do is actually stack them close to each other, you would think, or not as the case may be. If you actually add water to a soluble thing, say if it's a chlorine, the actual positive side of the water, which is the hydrogen side, will start to cluster around, presenting the negative side on the outside. So the polarized water will start to encase your charge and actually make your charge appear to grow bigger and bigger. So that's one layer of water. Now, the energy of that process really depends on the actual things to do with electron affinity and electron negativity, how that charge physically, it's not a point charge, it's actually a distributed charge, how that charge sits. Now, NO3, a nitrate, it's very, very difficult to actually get a it's very optimum for it because it's, the electron's not in a point position. It's nitrogen's got very low electron affinity, oxygen's around the outside of it. Because it hasn't got a very localized high gradient of charge, I suppose that's the way to say it, it prefers to actually have a shield of water around it, and that's why nitrates always have a high solubility, and sort of different things have high solubility. Now, in this case, the solubility of the individual ion really depends on what the other ion is there, and so the two can actually work together to actually strip the water away between them. I wish I could try and describe it. So if I have a really small salt crystal, I'm just trying to have a few goes at this, and say it only has 27 atoms in a 27. Oh, let's make that what's 2 27s, 54 atoms. That's 3 by 3 by 3 chlorines and 3 by 3 sodiums. So it's a really itsy bitsy thing, and I throw it in a bucket of water. Now, what will happen? I throw it in the water. The water will ingress or start to cluster around the sodium and cluster around the hydrogen and actually start to go in and build it apart. And so if that of that tiny little speck, which is only 54 atoms, will expand to the entire size of your bucket. And I know this because if I suddenly have a magic blade which cuts down the bucket and seals the two sides of the bucket equally, I will have 27 atoms on one side and 27 atoms on the other side. The charges won't be even in that case. That's why I had to think about it. But the actual salt crystals expand, keeping the rough orientation of atoms. Now, the atoms can move relative to each other, but they'll be held or pushed back into their central region. So let's say try and get too close to, say, a couple of chlorines. So the water actually, quite literally, you know, you have to believe this, actually repels the two charges. It doesn't repel the charges. It makes the charge more effective. So if you can imagine it, they're very large water coated atoms with unbelievable billions and billions of waters around each one, a very, very weak charge. So if you can imagine your individual ion is surrounded by a huge number of water molecules. Now, this is not hard shape. You can actually push into this quite easily and get these things to move. You can actually apply an electric field and get these ions to start to travel through the water. I think what people don't have in their mindset is the fact that these atoms are lifted up, and if you dissolve salt in water, the salt concentration will be pretty much the same as the top and the bottom in all directions, which mean that essentially you have expanded your salt crystal with these huge numbers of waters between them. And so let me try and go into the differences between electron affinity. I suppose ionization's another thing. So electron affinity and ionization. So ionization is the energy required to remove an electron. So metals, group 1 metals have lower ionization energies. This is the energy. So I have a sodium and I remove an electron from it. And electron affinity is the ability of a atom to actually, when an electron, if I've got a neutral electron, sorry, a neutral atom, and so therefore the charges are equal. What's you know, how can I fit anything more? So if I put an extra charge in it, that can't be stable. There's nothing overall attracting it. Of course, at very close distances, because the electrons are not points, they're actually shapes, multi-dimensional shapes. They actually travel through each other. Nothing like you've ever experienced in your day-to-day life. So this is, they're like ghosts. They can actually slip through each other in space. So chlorine is completely neutral, but at close distance, it will release an energy called attached to it. So that's electron affinity, that's the opposite of ionization. And then it's electronegativity. That is, if I create an ionic compound between, or covalent compound between two atoms, which atom will the electron be spend most of the time at? So hydrogen chloride. This is the electronegativity of hydrogen chloride. The chlorine is more electronegative. It will collect the electron a bit more. So this all goes into solubility. So it's the electronegativity does really, there's really no major notable feature. It actually, the polarizability in solution, I think it's 0 to, used to be 4, 3.96, I had to tweak it. The most electronegative atom is fluorine, and the least is the last francium or something like that. And so it's a nice uniform. So that's electronegativity. Electron affinity, which is basically the reverse of ionization energy, the amount of energy released when you add an electron to a neutral atom, which is mind-boggling for most people, because you can see that it takes energy to remove an electron from a neutral atom. Yeah, that sort of makes sense, because there's a potential energy between the electron and the ion. But there is also a potential energy between a neutral atom and an electron. And the reason is because of quantum mechanics, the way that that atom is shaped. You can look at a particular direction and see that from a particular angle, you can see an unshielded positive core. So at short range, it's the charge distribution isn't neutral. And this takes a bit of imagination, or I don't think it takes imagination. It takes a certain amount of time and advanced mathematics. Or for me, where you say, look, you know, I exist in this world. My only FC examples of this, I can only imagine or start to imagine some of this, like trying to actually conceptualize complex. Oh, indeed, look, there are complex numbers in there. There's conjugates and all that type of stuff. So this, again, this same thing of electron affinity and electronegativity. So electronegativity is for forming salts and bonds. Electron affinity is the electron actually for a neutral atom. No chemistry involved. The electron is the electron going into the neutral atom. Now, electron affinity has a trend which is mind-boggling. So if you look up, I ask you to look up the dynamic periodic table. If you look at electron affinity, you'll see that there's electron affinity has a trend across the S block, same trend across the D block, the middle block, almost no trend across the F block, because the F block is so electronically similar. It's they're hidden, they're lanthanides, and across the P block, and you'll see that nitrogen and manganese have the same electron affinity, i.e. that for some reason in the middle of these blocks you have a drop off of energy of storing off an extra electron. It'd be nice to know that. And similarly, there's, if you look at the magnetic properties, there's the magnetic properties of, I think, what was it, cobalt and iron in that part of the D block is repeated again in the F block. So you can see the block-to-block similarities or trends. So there's block-to-block trends if you start to go through electron affinity and the magnetic properties. So there's sort of patterns within the blocks. But if you detune yourself, you can see a pattern right across the periodic table, and people tend to go and repeat patterns across the periodic table. The issue here is that solubility is a real process in which the ions are minimized in energy by actually building themselves up into big balls, watery balls. The iron is a tiny little speck of iron or a positive ion or negative ion surrounded with a big ball of water, an ever-expanding ball of water. And these ions will expand in these balls of water, and these balls of water will become physically, if you have a really small drop of salt, they'll be the size of ping. They'll be physically large things. They'll be the size of ping pong balls. Although you can't see it, they will definitely be there because you know it, because you can actually cut it up and actually shrink them down and measure them again. So what's happening with the lead nitrate? The nitrate has got a strong attraction, a very strong attraction of water around it, so strong that it actually drags the lead into solution. The lead and chlorine can repel water, and so they start to actually, their sphere starts to contract. So the chlorine and lead spheres contract, and so it precipitates. But then you can reverse this with a little bit of acidity and temperature, and such their spheres grow up again, so your intense yellow will go clear, and then the spheres will slowly decay, and but they'll decay at very... and seek an energy favorable surface and form these beautiful gold shards. I only say this because there's a certain value of listening to this in the podcast. I may strike some ideas in your head or some ideas in your head that may be useful to listen to it, but it is really a beautiful thing to actually go into the lab, do this precipitation between lead nitrate and potassium chloride, and or to actually go out and if you can't do that, go onto the internet and look at this, at these precipitation reactions. So it's worth sort of a little podcast just to revise this section, and it's this thing of explained previously about copper sulfate, a beautiful reaction, and a beautiful series of demonstrations about it. It's being able to understand what dissolving actually is. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on teaching and keep on thinking science.